We're going to look at 1 Corinthians from verse 18, and Joe is going to read it for us. Thank you very much. So we've called the first session tonight Answering Tough Questions. We're just going to look at some of the theory and how to answer tough questions. Don't panic, you won't be asked to answer any tough questions this week. So that's what we're going to do for the first and main amount of our time tonight, is run down this sheet. But immediately hearing that passage just then, observant people should be struck, do we actually want to answer tough questions? Is that actually a biblical right thing to do? And just in your groups, have a look at the verses we've just read, and also particularly 1 verse 17, 2 verse 1, 2 verse 4, 2 verse 5. And first of all, you know, do we even want to answer tough questions? But also, you might want to talk about the motives why you might want to answer tough questions. I think it's the thing we're almost nervous about, looking forward to Christianity Explored. But why is it that's the thing we're nervous about? Why is it we want to be able to answer tough questions? And you might want to separate those motives into good ones and bad ones. And if you've got time, you might want to think of passages that balance the position here, that might say, actually, it's okay to answer questions. And maybe you think there aren't any. But have a go at that on your tables for a few minutes. Let's draw some of that in. Has any group decided we shouldn't try and answer questions? That's good, I think. Good. What were, on the kind of motives thing, what did we get to with, let's have from each group, some good motives and some bad motives. Shall I begin over here?
Oh, thank you. We thought that bad motive was if you were doing it to try and win an intellectual argument. So if you were just trying to batter someone down and convince them that you were right and sort of shout, ha, you know, I've got you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and the deeper motive behind that?
Potentially our desire to be right and them wrong, or I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's all about yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any others around there? These pauses are going to be great on the tape. Is the tape on? Let's have. That was one bad motive. Any more bad or good over here?
Good motive.
Yep.
Doing it for good, God's glory, according to Joe. So.
For God's glory and according to. I think it's an excellent motive. Keep going, or pass it around. More and more. Let's have. Don't be scared.
I think a bad motive can also be just that we want ourselves to seem that we haven't made the wrong choice. That we've made, you know, aren't I smart for having made the right choice?
Yeah, thank you. And we were talking about that as well, with particularly when someone asks a question we haven't thought before. And suddenly my faith is on the line. That's a really good question. And you've got to crack their head, otherwise you're in trouble. Particularly if your salary depends on believing in God. And that kind of thing, suddenly. Go on, Eddie. Yeah.
Another bad motive might be trusting in the power of eloquence rather than the power of the gospel.
Yeah. What did some of those verses say? It's interesting, isn't it? What happens if we are plausible?
Sorry?
Someone? Not the cross? Cross is emptied of its power. Which verse is that? 1:17, is that right? And 2 verse 5, their faith is... How does it say it? Yeah, their faith... is on shaky ground. There's any more? Any more? Good and bad? You have the parcel.
There's something we said about wanting to seem clever, haven't we?
Yeah, say it again.
We might want to seem clever in front of our other leaders and other people in the group.
And Graham said some particular things about the social context in which we're placed here. Do you want to just say some of that again?
Yeah, I think just in the part of London that we have, a lot of people have got quite powerful jobs on that, and people pride themselves on being clever, and sometimes we get drawn into that and we want to seem to be clever, and we need to be just very aware of that.
Yeah. I think that's very true. Most of our groups... So we have a guy currently who's been through Christianity Explored who is demanding his kind of what he'll do next must be with someone who is properly theologically educated. What do you do there, I wonder? But it's, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? That is the culture. Let's go on with any passages that would help us balance. Because Paul is saying much more than gospel content here, isn't he? He's saying gospel method as well. Isn't about being plausible, isn't about words of wisdom. So where else would we go, or do we actually need to ditch the whole second discussion? I mean that he's not just saying here that you must talk about the cross and get the doctrine of the cross right. He's saying also there's something about the way you talk about the cross, and that there's a bad way and a good way. And the bad way he identifies with plausible words of wisdom, with eloquent wisdom, that kind of thing. Whereas the good way he identifies as, you know, just talking about the cross, or being in weakness and fear and much trembling. So there's actually something in how you do it as well as what you say. Yeah. Verses. Let's have some verses and I'll write them up. Shout them. That might suggest that it's okay to answer questions. Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. And that is a technical, in the Greek world, that is the technical dialogue word, looking to Claire for confirmation, or Rachel, and is, you know, is into this whole reasoning process. Yeah, thank you. Keep going. Yeah, example of Jesus, answers questions often in a very forthright way, we were saying, yeah. Okay, which way is that cutting? For answering questions or against it? Yeah. Which verse was that? 2 Corinthians 4 verse 2. So again, a big emphasis on kind of honesty and on the statement of the truth. Yeah, keep going. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. 3 reasoned arguments. Okay, this is now saying I should speak for an hour rather than a discussion afterwards. Fine, yeah, no, good. That'd be fun. Any other passages? And there's the one key, cherry, famous passage on evangelism that we're not thinking of so far. You know, kind of, if you've ever heard a talk on evangelism, there'll be 2 passages, and this is one of them. Not that one. Yeah, thank you. Which is what, 1 Peter? Who led Bible studies in 1 Peter with people last year from Christian Explored? 1 Peter, where's that? Always be prepared to give a reason for the hope. 3:15, I think that's right. Brian's not sure. That sounds right to me. Second Corinthians 10 verse 5 I had written down. Which is really quite aggressive. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ. which, yeah, there's a certain aggressive confidence there. Paul's very happy to talk in Acts about the fact that he tries to persuade people and reason in the synagogue every Sabbath, that kind of thing. I was thinking as well, do you know the little bit in Proverbs where it talks about how you answer a fool? I can't remember the reference. Someone can tell me by the end of the evening, Holly. But they're two great little verses, particularly, actually, as well useful for answering a question if someone asks you, doesn't the Bible contradict itself? Because the two verses say, do not answer a fool according to his folly. And then the next verse says, answer a fool according to his folly. And I think what's going on there is a kind of depending on the person thing. So answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes, or something like that it says. So someone gives you their big reason why they think Christianity is a load of rubbish. Actually, sometimes it's worth taking the rug and pulling it away and just showing him, actually, you're an idiot, so that he knows that. It's useful for him to know that. The other verse is saying, don't answer a fool according to his folly, or you'll be basically just the same as him. And you just get involved in this argument that nobody is getting any wisdom out of. So that's all about knowing your person, actually, and knowing when to do the right thing. Brian hasn't found it yet. Good. Have you got it? Go on. Proverbs 26, 4 and 5 was my summary of it, all right? Did I make any of it up? Good. Brilliant. So I think let's kind of sum that up just a bit. We're saying we aren't trying to win the argument. There's no sense in which being wise, winning the argument, will win people for Christ. And it may actually be counterproductive. Maybe counterproductive because we might empty the cross of its power. We might end up presenting the gospel as, you know, no big change. I think some kind of, even some brilliant books like some of C.S. Lewis's books get close to that. Every reasonable man should just nod his head and become a Christian. Gets close to your faith is actually in reason and that kind of thing. But we are saying that absolutely we want to be involved with people's questions. We want to be talking with them. We want to give the reasons for our hope. This at no point says actually the gospel is foolish, full stop. It is foolishness to certain groups. Verse 25 even says, for the foolishness of God is wiser than men. So it is still right on week one when we say Christianity is true in the real sense, in the sense that it ought to be able to explain any question. It ought to stand up to any attack. So in that sense, it loves to be asked questions of. But we do need to be very careful about our motives. And particularly if we're pandering. I think what's going on here particularly is in the Corinthian culture, they want impressive, wise answers. And I think that culture isn't that different from our culture. And if we're pandering to that culture, we're not really giving them the gospel. So just three obvious things out of 1 Corinthians 1. We need to tell people about the cross. Verse 23, we preach Christ crucified. And it's just interesting, given where I think the current debate in evangelism is a bit, is that you've got this kind of debate between signs and wonders evangelism and kind of reason, stuffy, intellectual evangelism. And actually both of those are the opposite of preaching Christ. Verse 22, Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, which is a stumbling block to both. And I think that's where the open statement of the truth verse is very helpful. We just preach Christ crucified with no impressive adornments. So tell people about the cross when you're answering questions. That is the thing that is the content of what we want to say. It comes back to what we were looking at the first night on the weekend. Success is declaring the gospel, not winning the fights around the tables or in the pub. And the cross, what the cross does is divide people. That's clear throughout this passage, isn't it? So people will reject the cross. They'll think it's complete rubbish, total folly, just ludicrous. And I hope you're prepared for that emotionally. You may never have lost an argument since you were five. I think I'm that type of personality. Are you prepared to to be an idiot, to be thought an idiot. So people will come in, and there'll be people you'll get to like, people whose opinion of you you value. You know, guys who actually, over week one, two, three, they'll begin to think you're not too weird, even though you're a Christian, you're quite intelligent, you've got a decent job. And then we'll tell them about the cross, and they may think you're a total idiot. And just, are we ready for that? Because to people who are perishing, it is utter folly. And that is what they will think of us as well. But also, the cross is how God saves people. It isn't really foolish. God at his most foolish is wiser than any man. We are actually telling them the thing that is the truest, the best, the heartbeat of the universe. And it is that that saves people. To those who God is saving, it is the power of God. So there are three basic principles where we need to check our motives, and then it's all about the cross, which will divide people. But we are now going to think about how to answer questions. I hope you think that's a thing worth doing. I think we need to be good at it, actually. I think the 1 Peter verse is saying that. That actually it is negligent not to be prepared for questions. So every time we're asked a question, I think it was Claire in our group, said that the knee-jerk reaction is often what we do. When someone asks a question, I will answer it. That's just what I've always done. I think 1 Corinthians is challenging that a bit. We need to think, actually, what is the best, most loving, most helpful thing to do here? So just very briefly, here are four types of questions. You may be able to think of more. There are questions of clarification. So a classic one of these would be, what did that man mean in the talk? That'd be a question for clarification. It may sometimes be expressed in a different way. I didn't like what he said with that logic diagram. And that might mean I disagree with the logic in the diagram, or it might mean I didn't understand what the man said. So that is where listening to people is very important on this kind of question. Using your co-leader, you start answering the question, but as you start answering the question, you kind of look at your co-leader to see if you're in fact answering a completely different question, and they kind of shake their head and you stop. So question of clarification. There are classic objections, which we'll look at a bit over the next 2 weeks. How can you trust the Bible? What about suffering? What about other religions? And these can very often be the multi-layered questions. Everybody knows these are the questions to ask Christians. So you ask them if they are your genuine heart question, but you also ask them if, you know, the gospel's getting a bit close and you want to keep it away, or you ask them if you feel that you've been patronized in the Bible study and you want to prove that you're clever again. So there's all sorts of reasons why you might ask them. But they're also very good questions in their own right. But they are the classic objections, and actually there aren't many of them. There are only a few. We'll be able to cover most of the questions you'd be asked most often in that situation, which is quite encouraging. There might be a question about general biblical thinking, by which often it will be kind of lifestyle thing. So stuff like sex before marriage, stuff like divorce, what does the Bible say about that? And these questions are often the things they're most nervous about, actually. Particularly if they've been there for a few weeks. Because if Christianity is beginning to seem attractive, if Jesus is beginning to seem attractive, then actually suddenly it becomes a big deal. What about, you think I've got to try and get back with my divorced husband? You say I've got to move out of the house I share with my girlfriend, or, you know, suddenly there's a big issue, the kind of general biblical thinking questions. And I think this is the fourth category, and again maybe another category, but the kind of personal experience questions about us, I think they come up quite often. So how did you become a Christian? Have you always been a Christian? How did your friends react when you became a Christian? And I think we're kind of trained, I think, not to want to talk about ourselves too much. That's kind of pride and irrelevant. But actually, don't be afraid to give some time to these questions. Again, they can be very important ones. Again, you don't want to just think, okay, now I've got 5 minutes of I am the star, and I'll tell you about me. But what is it, in my experience, that would be helpful to this person? This is how it was for me when I became a Christian. And what you're doing is you're saying you could do it too. Not impossible. I was a person just like you. This is how I did it. How did my friends react? You're being honest. Yes, it was really difficult for several of them. I lost that friendship completely, but I survived. And these friends actually said, we really respect you, or whatever it is. Actually, you're telling them what it might be like for them. You're talking about the cost, you're talking about perseverance, you're talking about help from other friends. So take those, and we'll get all four areas of questions, and we do need to take all of them seriously. Any questions about that so far? Can anyone think of another category? Anyone from last year think you didn't get any of those sorts? Yeah, thank you. Give an example of a red herring. Yeah. So the aliens question. Now, actually, I've met people for whom the aliens question was a serious thing. And actually, I think philosophically it is one of the best ways of explaining away the miracles of Jesus and from a scientific worldview. Compared to the philosophically ridiculous options like they didn't happen, or people made it up, or it was all fluke, he walked on sandbars, all of which options have been promoted very seriously by big books in the last century. I think actually the aliens option is a lot more credible than that. Not that I think it's terribly credible. But it's been a real issue, for instance, in Claire's mum's life. She read a book that said, or an article in the Daily Mail that said, Jesus was an alien, and that's a big question suddenly. So again, almost any question could be a red herring or could be a genuine question, depending on who's asking it. But yeah, we do sometimes get the actual genuine, the absolute red herring. Anyone else want to chip in at this point? Good. Now I want to go through seven pointers mainly for the classic objection, though some of it will transfer to other areas. And as we said on the training weekend, in the discussions in the groups, you're normally not trying to do all these things. You're normally not trying to answer the question yourself. But actually, in the pub afterwards, or one to one later on, or sometimes in the group, if the question's just gone on and on and people are frustrated, actually this is how I begin answering it. It can be quite helpful. But these are things just to bear in mind. I think they're also very useful things just for our own chats with people at work, that kind of thing. So here are seven pointers. First of all, Joe Ross says you should glorify God when you answer questions. Just give us, anyone who was there on the weekend from 1 Thessalonians 2, what would it look like to glorify God in how you answer questions? Anyone who remembers stuff we did on the first night? It's very unfair asking you to remember 3 days ago. Turning to it is fine, that's allowed. People who weren't there on the weekend are feeling very smug. I'm just going to speak to the people who weren't there on the weekend very briefly. We have here and on the table some tape order forms for you to get the tapes on the weekend. I think that would be helpful. And you just write in the special information box what it is that you want. You just say the dates of the weekend and the names of the talks. And you'll need to put on there as well the 2 RML Mark Ben Cooper Saturday morning All About Mark's Gospel talks. If you say all of that, then Monty will know what you mean. People who were there on the weekend, what would it look like? What's a glorifying to God answer? What does that look like? Declaring the gospel? Yes, very good. Yes, thank you. The answer that God would want us to give. So truthful and not just what they want to hear. Yeah, keep going. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's very important, isn't it? With particularly the personal experience type ones and the general biblical thinking. Thank you very much. Gentle like a nursing mother and also like a black dad, which will make sense when you've heard the talk. I think those things are all very important if we're going to answer in a way that glorifies God. It's like every part of our lives as Christians. We want to glorify God. That's the first thing we want to do. Then second thing, get to the gospel, because the gospel is what saves. And just be careful not to be crass about that. So when I see suffering on TV, it makes me think of all the sin in the world. Is that actually true? When you look at the suffering on TV, do you think of all the sin in the world? Do you ever think that? Or often, I tend to think either that's a real shame, or I'm very glad I'm not there. And those are actually what I say. So if you're going to pretend... So we want to get to the gospel, but don't be kind of going from first gear to fourth gear or whatever. The other way around would be worse from that. So think, though, and I think this is... again, this is one of these things which is borderline kind of trying too hard, but is also quite helpful. Think what question you would like to answer next after the one you're being asked at the moment. This is a John Chapman piece of advice. So if we go back to isn't Christianity all a lot of rubbish? That's the question we're on at the moment, but we want to get to the gospel, and the gospel is over there. And how are we going to get there? What question do I want them to ask next over here? Because what I say next will, to a large extent, dictate what question they ask. So, for instance, if I say, think of all the Christian witness through 2,000 years, what question will I get asked next? Sorry, Claire? Yeah, thank you. I think that's right, isn't it? So, sorry, couldn't hear. We'll go next to, but loads of Christians are hypocrites. I think that's right if we say this. Not necessarily a bad place to go. Probably more productive than this, nearer the gospel, but just it's worth knowing if you go there, you'll go there next, almost certainly. What about if we go to trueness? Yeah, thank you. Reliability of the Bible will almost certainly be where we go next. If we mention evidence, if we mention any of those things, the next thing we'll be talking about will be the reliability of the Bible. And what about, I think these are excellent, why and no, as long as you know your group. I think no is a good thing to say. If you say it with a smile and convince them you love them like their mum and their dad. If you say, what do you think Christianity is? Or I might agree with you, where will you go next? So if you take it down, the religion is all a lot of rubbish, where will you go next? Okay, so that's what you're hoping, which would be great, wouldn't it? So you might go to what Christianity really is, we're on the gospel. Ba-ding. Where might you go? Sorry? Okay, yes, so you might end up, why are Christians so different? So actually there you're in a how do you interpret the Bible area. Yes, thank you. Could even go even more broadly than that, couldn't it? Into what about all the other religions? And suddenly you're in answering another religion's question. See, the way again, this is actually, there are only 7 or 8 classic objections, and they're all hovering there, just near any question. I thought as well of, sorry, what else might you have said? One thing you might say is, no, Christianity isn't a load of rubbish because it makes sense of the human condition. Where will you go next after that? Yes, Adam and Eve, possibly. Yeah, so again, you've gone into, it makes sense of the natural world. If they take it kind of as a natural world, you'll go to evolution and creation, science. What about if they take it the other way, not the natural world, but kind of how human beings are? Say again. Yes, social gospel you could do, Christianity that answers all the problems. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, that's true, you might go there. Yeah, thank you. So actually, no, I disagree with Christianity. Actually, that's quite a good place to go. You've got to the gospel there, haven't you? I think it doesn't explain things because people are good. You say you're good then, are you? We're on the gospel. I thought also it might go to suffering, that one there. If it explains the human condition and suffering so well, let's talk about suffering. And John Chapman's point with this is just that, you know, that's just how the conversation's going to go. And just think, where is the most helpful place to go? Think of the person, you know the person. And think also what you're able to answer questions on. You know, if you have always felt utterly nervous about talking about science and evolution, then don't say, oh, but I think, you know, there's loads of evidence in the natural world that backs that up. Because where will you go immediately? You'll immediately be talking about science. So what is the next question? And obviously we're trying to get to the gospel. And I don't think any of that is kind of ignoring their question. You answer their question, but actually what you say will have further questions to it. That is how dialogue works. Any questions on that? Great. I found that really helpful when I heard that on a Chapo tape. I think that's really, really helpful kind of thing to have in the back of your mind. Great. Point three, consider the question behind the question. I'm sure you're used to thinking about this. But somebody asks you a question about Christian marriage. It might be because they're interested. It might be because they've seen something in the papers about homosexuality. It might be because a Christian has just persuaded their girlfriend to dump them because they're not a Christian. And in each of those cases, you want to say something very different, don't you? Because the real question is either Christians are awful or Christians are bigoted or just tell me, I'm just interested. And dangerous, if we answer I'd just be really interested to know what Christians think about marriage, I think I'd probably agree. If we answer that as if someone has said, you're really bigoted, and then the answer will not fit the question behind the question, even if it fits the actual words that have come out. Suffering is obviously the biggest example of this. And it's pretty, you know, this isn't universally true, but in general, someone who asks a question about suffering will have some personal experience behind the question. Very significantly often, a major tragedy is the reason why people come on a course like this. It is actually one of the ways God uses suffering. But that will mean, so we had how many, five, six last on the last course here because Jill Marsh had died, Jenny Marsh had died. And that was the reason they were here, all of them, and they knew each other were here. Their Christian friends were with them because for that reason. So, you know, that is a classic. There's a question behind the question. And if you just launch at it like an academic question, you're not actually, their question actually is, why is this so painful? How is this so unfair? Rather than intellectually, what would you say about suffering? And in that case, I think that's a really wise, and we'll put some more ticks by that. It's fine, it's normal actually to ask questions back when people ask you questions. It is only kind of school teachers who don't do that. In normal life, people do. So it's perfectly fine to say, that's a great question. Can I ask what sparked your interest in that? Or that's a really big subject. Is there any particular area you want us to start on? Even what answer are you expecting from a Christian? What would you expect me to say? And just all of those are just saying, really, why don't you speak again? Do you mind just saying something else? But they're just kind of socially skilled ways of saying, over to you again. So when, just a kind of minor example, but when I ring people up to tell them about the course, I try and always ring people, and one of the reasons I do that is because at the end of telling them when it is and where and all those things, I can say, do you have any other questions about the course? And that's all I say, and you know, they're perfectly free to take that as meaning, do I have to pay for the meal? But in general, people react as if I'd said, what is your deepest life secret that is driving you to Christianity Explored? And people don't mind saying that kind of thing. People are here because they want to talk about big things. But you just need, you know, let me just put the ball back in your court briefly. And I think particularly with a question where you're not sure what the question behind the question is, and it's just part of being a good listener and a responsible answerer of their questions, and just to say, why are you asking that question? Or what is it particularly? And you won't always get a helpful answer to that, but sometimes you will. Here's an example from a Wednesday morning, very recently. We were praying in Covent Garden in our prayer meeting, and two drunk guys came in and kind of interrupted the prayer meeting. I think one of the things drink does is it breaks down the kind of normal social defences. So we were able to have, in 30 seconds, the kind of from presenting question to question behind the question, in, you know, almost just like that. But so the guy came in, he saw us with Bibles open, and he said, who wrote the Bible then? And so that's his presenting question. Who wrote the Bible? So people began answering. You know, lots of people wrote the Bible. People like David, and people started saying that. And he said, no, they didn't. Who wrote the Bible? Or it's a lot of rubbish. Why do you think that? So his presenting issue is Bible reliability. But actually all it took, after one or two goes at answering his stated question, was just to say, all we said was, why do you think that? Why do you think the Bible's not what it says it is? And he was perfectly happy, because he was drunk, to say, because my mum, who was a Christian, died when I was 5. And there's the real question, the question behind the question. Actually, it's a question about the God of the Bible and the claims of the Bible. It's not a question about Bible reliability at all. And I don't know how used you are to people, and you know, the kind of the way people can be completely different from how they present, but it is just worth being a good student of human beings here, that actually people can say on the surface one thing, and we all do it as well, but actually the real issue is completely different, and there's just something there about being a gentle listener and allowing them to come back with what the real issue is, and often we may come away from a conversation not sure what the real issue is. And actually that would be a good time, if you feel you're going round and round in circles, to say, I'm not sure we're getting anywhere. Should we write that question down? I'll go away and think a bit more about it, see if I can think of something more helpful to say. And then you can always talk to your co-leader, what do you think the issue was there, or think about what they've been saying. So consider the question behind the question. Fourth thing, fit your answer into the biblical framework. So if What's this? Two ways to live. Fantastic. So here is two ways to live. If somebody says, does God love me? Which box of two ways to live are they in? Which part of the biblical framework are they not believing? Sorry, yes. So it could be one, creation. Or could be the cross. So it's just worth thinking, as I answer this, I could answer it by saying lots of stuff about God's love, but why don't I answer it with the gospel? And that's where we are. What if somebody says, doesn't everyone go to heaven? Which box are we in? Yes, two where you cross out the crown. Or six, where you have to decide. Though I guess that's the bit, they understand that you've said it. Five, go on. I don't know, keep going. This one is empty currently, but you could fill it. What? Why would that be five? Judgment in three, I think, would be, see if I can still draw this. So judgment would be another way. Actually, that's... No, everyone isn't going to go there, because this is where we all are. Holly isn't wrong, though. Jesus is now reigning in heaven. Yes, yeah, Jesus has risen. Sorry? But he's risen, so he is the king. Can I draw a J upside down? So actually, people who are here, doesn't everyone go to heaven? Heaven is where Jesus is the king. If you're someone who doesn't have Jesus as your king, you cannot be part of that kingdom. So it's just worth thinking where, as someone asks a question, even having... Yeah, sorry, Joe, go on. Yeah, good question. I assume it's on the bookstore, but I've never checked. Yeah, that's a good idea. Does anyone know the website? I think it may even be in the back of one of the Christian Explore books. Is it there? Oh, look, there it is. What you need to do is walk over here. In fact, I'll get this as well. Yes, Two Ways to Live, or any Bible outline. But it's just worth having in the back of your head a kind of gospel overview. Sagan? Is it on the St. Helens website? How exciting. That's fantastic. Deborah isn't sure it's on the St. Helens website. And Deborah runs the St. Helens website. So, yeah. You can get to it from the St. Helens website. The other thing over there, while over there, is here are the 7 most frequently asked questions with some answers on them. So that's helpful as well. Good. Yeah, worth learning Two Ways to Live as well, though. Just if only for your own confidence. Fifth thing. Fifth thing I think is really helpful as well. I think the Chapo thing and then I think this fifth thing are the two big things I've learned in the last few years that have been really helpful. Work out what it is that the person believes. Everyone believes in something. There's no one who's a human being who doesn't have beliefs. And you can work out what their core values are. And as they ask you a question, and as you talk to them, their presuppositions will be revealed. The things that for them are just true. Everyone has those, again. Even the most rationalist scientist has things that just are true. He cannot prove everything. There are just things he knows. And it's helpful to know those things. And it's okay to just ask gently, can I ask why you believe that everyone is basically good? It's a perfectly fair question back. Can I ask how you would explain suffering? That's a perfectly fair thing to ask. And just asking them basically, what are your presuppositions? And under this as well, I think this is the real thing that has helped me, is that as well as core values, most people have a kind of place where their core values meet some kind of past experience or some kind of thing in their life that means if you touch this core value and this part of them at the same time, you will get an explosion. So I think most of us are aware of that in ourselves as well. That, you know, I'm quite happy having a conversation about this, and I'm quite happy talking about this thing in my life. But if you put them both together at the same time, for me it would be fairness and stupid rules or something like that, then actually you get an explosion. You get a slightly, sub-rational response that's a kind of bigger response than you were expecting. So if somebody agrees with you about Jesus, he's a good man, they even agree with you about sin, but if their core value is tolerance and their past experience was a Christian teacher who was a bully and was always berating them and telling them off, then when you start talking about the exclusivity of Jesus and that Jesus is right and they are wrong, then you've got an explosion, because actually that's their kind of hot spot on those things. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? When people experience that in conversations with people, suddenly you're in a shouting match in a way that's surprising. Anyone experience that? No one? Yes, some nods, good. Able to say what the things were? Yeah. That's a very good example, isn't it? Yeah. I think it happens quite often. And actually, sometimes people are quite good at hiding it. So we don't see, we just get the suddenly increased tempo of argument and that kind of thing. So just a brief example. Those who are on the weekend will need to explain to those who weren't. But on the weekend, we met 4 individuals. Don't worry, I'm not going to make you do any role play at this point. But we met Jane, who was in her 40s, had some kids and was a Roman Catholic. We met Peter, who was a student of physics and was a postmodernist. We met Jim, who was a teacher whose mum had died of cancer and who was into his good deeds. And we met Anne, who was in her 20s, had been to India and was a relativist. Round your tables, what are their core values, first of all? We're going to fill those in here. What are the core values? I've obviously given you a bit of a start up here already. None of them are nudists.
Wasn't an alcoholic.
Reasonably quickly, 4 minutes, minute each. Okay, very briefly, you'll need to shout, need to be quick. Jane, Jane's core values? Say? Daily Mail, do you think? Yeah, family. I think that's better, actually. Which the Daily Mail thinks it believes in, but doesn't really. Yeah, family is good. Yeah, and religion. Specifically being good, actually. Yes. Any others? That'll do. Good. Peter. Say again? Private eye, do you think? Yeah, tolerance. Yes, intellectual, make that a value. What, that things should make sense, something like that. Up to a point, he thinks. Rationalism, slightly, though he's, yeah, being postmodern isn't actually very rational. But, yeah. Any others for Peter? He's, just because he's a student. Not all students have a laugh. He's a fit. Jim? Jim's core values? Good deeds. Sorry, Claire, you said? Yep. People should do their social thing. Any others? Fairness? Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, he was a hugely fair man. Yeah. Any other? Great. And Anne? Yep, social action goes across. Yep. Yeah, just... Yeah, so tolerance, all the kind of... Yep. Any others? Socialist is a wide basket of views. Yeah, that may be fairness again, or kind of poverty bad... That was there. War bad. In fact, conflict bad was one of her things, wasn't it? Actually. Okay, and anyone, just shout them out, because time is running out. Any idea where the hotspots might be with these people? Yeah, where are you going to suddenly get an explosion, possibly? For who? Yes. So, yeah, thank you. Can't write. There we go, over family. Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a massive thank you. Yes. Yeah, and if we can find a way, if we can find a way to combine grace and Jesus family stuff, I don't think quite how we do that. But yeah, then we'll get a major... That's a whole world you've... Yeah. Any of the others? Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. If you say God is fair, if you say God is good, if even better, if he asks you a question about suffering and you say that you found in your experience God is always good to you, you are going to get shouted at. Aren't you? Yeah. I think that's an easy good and suffering will be a bad mix. Yeah. Any of the others? Both of these or yeah, Jesus being the only way will definitely hit their core values. Yeah, so absolute truth. Yeah, in both of these. Yeah. Whereas, yeah. So exclusion from heaven, those kind of things, if we can combine them. Sorry, and for Jim. Yes. Your social responsibility is worthless. And that's only, these are obviously not complete individuals that we know. I think Jim and maybe Jane are the clearest examples there, aren't they? Of actually, you just think, if I knew this person, actually it's pretty obvious the reaction I'll get if I say this. He will react like that. I think all of that is just about what we're doing here supremely is applying, you're doing it in any Bible study, but we're applying Christian truth to individuals. And actually you need to know the individual as much as you can, not always possible. And you know, it's fine to say, sorry, I think I've really offended you, I'm really sorry I've done that. Should we leave it there, or should we come back to it? You know, that's perfectly fine. And good, last two things quickly then. Number six, keep the discussion open. That's obviously what we're trying to do in the groups. And also the 1 Corinthians 1 stuff helps there, doesn't it? You're not trying to win an arm wrestle. You're trying to win people for the gospel. And sometimes you can do kind of closing discussion things, but you've got to be really careful. I think I said on the weekend, I did call one person ridiculous. But I hope I picked my person carefully. Your views are just stupid. And that was trying to be the kind of Proverbs 26 thing. I don't know if it worked or not. And finally, use the Bible. This isn't about showing them that you know all the answers in your head philosophically. You want to give them the Bible as a relevant book to them. And one of the best ways of doing that is showing them that it actually speaks, answers the questions that they are most concerned about. Don't give them too many references. Don't give them ones that are kind of hard to pull out of context. So try and make it sound as if, in fact, yeah, the best references will be the ones that are in context. Try and make it sound as if anybody could find them. So I love it when someone asks a question and there's a cross-reference from the bit in Mark in the footnotes. I'd slightly careful about that because we don't want people to learn to read the Bible by reading footnotes, but sometimes it can just deflect attention away from you and how much you know. Or they ask about divorce and you say, actually there's a big discussion of divorce in three of the Gospels and in one of the letters that were written earlier. It was an issue that was big for them. Should we go to one of those places? There's one in Mark. Let's go there. Let's see what Jesus says. Actually, you're not saying to know the answer to your question, you have to know every verse because they're all different. You're saying there's actually a passage that takes on that issue and talks about it. And I happen to know where it is. Should we go and look at it? Be very careful. I used to have a Jehovah's Witness guy who cut my hair. So in fact, I think the closest hairdresser within walking distance of here, you walk over to Spitalfields Market, you keep going. When you get to the Ten Bells pub out of the Jack the Ripper film, you just go round it to the left and there's a little alleyway and there's a hairdresser on the right there. He'll cut your hair for about £4.50. But the deal with him is he's a Jehovah's Witness and he wants to tell you about his beliefs. So what he'll do is he'll cut half of your head. And then you'll sit there in his chair for as long as he thinks that he's having a good conversation with you, sometimes for an hour, hour and a half, and he won't cut the rest of your head until he's finished talking to you. Which is interesting evangelistic strategy, if you ever become a hairdresser. But the thing with him was that every time you said, what about this, he had two places he'd go. He either had his Bible, but the way he used his Bible was that he had bits underlined. And it was just quite depressing as you sit there with bits of itchy hair down the back of your neck, was that every verse you mentioned was already underlined in his Bible. He knew it all. He knew where you were coming from, and he'd be able to say, no, that doesn't really mean that. It means this because. And the other place he went to sometimes would he'd go and get his book of answers. He'd go and get his book of answers, open it, and you'd be reading his book of answers. That is actually the opposite of listening to people, the opposite of giving them the Bible themselves. Any questions about those seven things? Great. We will leave it there. I have some homework to set. You'll be very pleased to know that we haven't done the exercise I said we were going to do tonight. And we've taken much longer than I thought, but that's fine. We will do it next week. And that exercise is, what do you do when someone comes to you and says, I think I would like to become a Christian? So what we will do next week is in pairs, make you do that. From that point, I think I would like to become a Christian, all the way through to maybe praying a prayer or whatever you want to do, and what you say next after that, and how you leave the conversation. So we'll get you to then. The other thing I'd like you to do is prepare some questions. You'll see on your table you have some sheets that say possible questions. Get hold of those. And I would like slot group number one to prepare answers to questions from week two and week seven. Week two and week seven. Slot group number two to prepare... Is that number two? I can't see around the coffee pot. To prepare answers to questions from week three and week six. And slot group number three from week four and week five. And we will do some scary games next week as a way of thinking about how to answer those. Brilliant. Did everyone get that? Four and five, three and six, two and seven. Thank you very much. Let's just pray before we finish. But thank you, you've worked hard. Let's pray. Dear Father God, thank you again. Thinking of people who are patient with us, with our questions. Think of the times that we were just obstructive to the gospel, times we didn't really want to know the answer. Think of as we first heard the cross and how foolish it was. Thank you so much that you rescued us, that you saved us, many of us, from our intellectual pride, and that the gospel, the cross, was for us the power of God that saves. Father, help us as we prepare to lead, as we prepare to answer people's questions. Help us to be like the Lord Jesus as we do that, to be loving, caring, clear, unashamed, all those things, that your greater glory would result. And we ask this in his name. Amen.